It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 395. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and send me a friend request. Follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. Have a lot of great topics tonight. I'm getting to that email that I didn't have enough time to finish the last week with that will definitely be talking a lot, answering that. And then I have some other great questions that have come up this week that I'm going to discuss. So the email questions are literally feeding the topic for tonight. And we're going to talk about retiring servers and moving to the cloud. We're going to talk about how you can not lose email by switching domains, providers for your hosting. And how do you handle your email when you're doing that? And I have some great tips there. And I've actually went through that. And I've had clients go through that, one just recently. So some great suggestions there. With that, when it comes to running a successful business, there are many things you have to get right, like hiring good people. But one thing is often overlooked, and that's protecting the data that powers your business. Did you know that 12,000 laptops are lost or stolen at airports every single week? Even a single incident of data loss isn't cheap. It can cost $10,000 or more to recover data from a single laptop or server. Businesses of all sizes and consumers use Mozy Pro to back up everything from emails, contacts, important documents, to family pictures and music. It's automatic and it works. One advertising executive's company lost an entire bank of servers, which nearly brought their business to its knees. Then he found Mozy Pro. He says, "I was shocked at how fast it works, and their people know how to work with Macs." Mozy Pro business backup plans are affordable, and there are no contracts to sign or hardware to buy. Give our friends at Mozy a call. They've been doing this for a long time and run the most secure, most trusted online backup service. Right now, you can save 15% by using promo code PODCAST15. Call 877-669-9776. That's 877-669-9776 or visit mozypro.com. That's mozypro.com. The first email for this evening is from Kevin, and he asks a great question. He says, "Hi, Mike. I have a couple clients that we will likely decommission their old SBS 2003 server. And this is the one with SBS 2000 in the next few months. I was wondering if you can talk a little about some steps you recommend to perform while doing this. I know there are a wide variety of things that are involved in projects like these. For instance, is the current SBS serving Exchange? In one case, the SBS is, and we will migrate them to a hosted exchange, likely with MS Office 365. We, of course, also have to do something with their data. And in most of these decommissions, we will move to a NAS, likely Synology. We will also be moving the DHCP scope and role to the router and setting up standard network printers. Then the desktop client machines will be moved back into a peer-to-peer workgroup environment. You may be asking, why would you decommission and not migrate to a new SBS? In these few cases, an SBS is just not necessary, and it is overkill to migrate to a new box. For the most part, their primary role is a file server, which a NAS can do in a much more efficient and cost-effective manner. Hosted Exchange is typically far easier for the clients to manage, set up new users, and access their own hosted SBS with Exchange. Plus, if the current old SBS is handling DHCP and DNS roles, a good router firewall and possibly OpenDNS will do the trick. Moreover, these small businesses are just that. They are small, typically a few client desktop machines, and the company has a small budget, and an SBS is simply too expensive and too much maintenance, and it is also too big of a single point of failure. None of these clients need the centralized management of WSUS or user account management either, since they have just a few machines. Plus, one of the clients is likely making the switch over to all Mac machines. So SBS would work, it's just not the best fit anymore. Are there any other things I should be thinking of for these clients? There are so many layers of questions here. And the best way to tackle this, I completely agree with what you're doing and what your clients are deciding to do. And I have clients that are exactly in that situation. They have small business server. It's too big for them right now. They got into it because they wanted email and they wanted shared calendars. And years ago, it was cheaper to and more cost effective to buy a license for small business server to get those all that functionality in your office than to buy a full-blown licensed server of each of the server products. You would have had to buy Server 2003 plus Exchange 2003 plus maybe SQL, and there are so many server licenses. SBS is a great way to combine all those server options at a very affordable price. But when you only have four or five people, it is overkill. Now, you're going to hosted Exchange services. That is great. I have a client that we're going to be migrating possibly to SureWeb. After all the research that I've been doing, that's one of the best out there. Intermedia is another one. There's the Office 365 that you mentioned, Kevin, here. There's some great options for hosted Exchange services. Okay, that's one. You hit it on the head on all the steps that you have to go through. You have to, when you decommission the server, I mean, literally, once you get all the data off the server, you could just turn it off, reformat. If you were in a multi-server environment, there are procedures for demoting a domain controller, removing the last Exchange server in an Exchange farm. There's lots of procedures that you and steps that you have to go through if you're going to still leave some servers behind. But because you are completely decommissioning the server, you can just turn it off, unplug it from the network, reformat, do whatever you're going to do. After you get all the data off and after you have taken each of the workstations and removed them from the domain and lowered them to a work group instead of a domain. Now you get your NAS device, the Synology, love the product, put that in place. But here's something when you asked, what are you forgetting? How are you going to back up the Synology? Yes, they have great fault tolerance where they have multiple drives, but that's not to replace a backup. Where is their data going? And that's something to consider. Are you going to have another device? How are you going to back up the Synology device? So you need to answer that. I don't have an immediate answer for you, and I would like some ideas on this. What's the best way of backing up a NAS device? Do you get like a cheaper NAS? Do you get another big hard drive, kind of hang it off one of the workstations and back up across the network? How are you going to get it off site? Do you have the Synology be able to back up to the cloud somewheres for your data using a service? And I don't know if they support NAS. I like the service Enveloc, Enveloc, but I do not know if they support NAS devices. They're really server-based for their agent in order to back up to the cloud. So you have that challenge. And now I'm going to really mix it up for you and give you something else to think about. I have a client that this weekend, my son Ryan and an electrician who is a great cabler and certified and just an expert cabler, I put a project together for a CPA firm where they are moving 100% to the cloud entirely, including their desktops. I believe it's called Cloud 9, and they pay a fee for the year that includes all the Office licensing. They literally open up a browser session, and they're in what would be the equivalent of a Citrix environment. It's just a terminal server, but it's so fast. They have a hosted-based server with all of their apps on it, and then they are literally their entire Office suite and email is cloud-based. All they need is a browser and their internet connection. Here was the problem that we solved. MHS Consulting, my consulting firm, went in with the solution to redo the entire network infrastructure. On Saturday, we landed at 9 a.m. at the site and worked for 14 hours straight. Took a break for lunch and dinner. And I took care of all the networking. And one of the things I had to do was make sure, redo the router, just like you mentioned here, and make sure that that was set up an access point that I provided for the employee wireless networking, set up a separate router for guest wireless for customers, clients to come in, set up another access point in a conference room so they can use this for additional desktops during their seasons where tax season they have to have extra people working, assistants and different people. They can be wireless there, but we also added some extra network drops. Their local network was a disgrace. They had hubs plugged into hubs, plugged into hubs. There was even a hub in the ceiling that split off connections. It was a wiring nightmare. When I did my first walkthrough this office, I said, you have to redo every connection and we need to centralize it. You need a core switch to be the center of your network. Every device needs a home run Cat6 connection back to the patch panel. We're going to provide a rack, a new switch, which is the HP ProCurve that I always recommend. Great switch. A patch panel. We relocated their connection for their internet, which was Comcast, so they had a great internet connection. The problem was everybody was dropping connections because you had a hub going to a hub going to a hub. Oh, it was ugly. It took a long time to get this all done, test it, but it was perfect. It went great. And the reason I'm bringing this up is this is a client that has totally embraced the cloud. So the problem is you got to have a fat pipe to the internet. You better have a good internet connection if you're going to live in the cloud. And we use the word cloud. It's the internet. It's just hosted-based services that you need to get to. And you better have a strong local network where you have good wiring, you have a good switch that everybody will connect to that switch, and then that switch connects to the firewall router to get you to the internet. The network printing was interesting. I inherited two printers that were USB-based, made them network-based. Let's remove them from any dependencies to a workstation. So I used the IO Gear USB to network to Cat5 print server devices. They're very inexpensive. When we were done, it was beautiful. Everything was working great. Not a single phone call this week. When it came time, Monday morning, Tuesday morning, it's just perfect. Everything was running great. Three of us did a fabulous job, and they were extremely happy. If you have an office, just like our listener Kevin here, you got to make sure when you change from a domain to a work group and you're now logging in, all of the local profiles. So you're going to want to go back to a couple shows ago when I was talking about that very issue, which is the change of the profile. And we also have an email coming up that you're going to want to pay attention to with some answers to that. There's a program called Profiler that you're going to want to embrace to help you migrate that profile that's going to change at the local workstation. So that's going to be a gotcha when you're done. When you do the servers, you're going to now, when you don't have group policies to be able to accomplish some of the things that I don't know if they were using them, that will be something that you would need to take care of. If, for example, pushing printer drivers to all of or the printer settings where you could take advantage of group policy, that is not going to be available to you once you're back to a regular work group machine. You're going to have to visit the workstations, which you're probably going to do anyway. Hit each workstation, make sure you have static IP addresses to all of the network printers, and reset up a local network port to that IP address on all the workstations. So that's something else that you have to do. Let me know, Kevin, how you made out with this. And if anything I said helped you out, or were there other things that you didn't even mention in the email that you discovered during this migration? It's a trend that I'm seeing. And if you're in the business and you support servers on small companies, get ready for this. We've come full circle. We've set up servers in small businesses years ago, and now we're going away from that. And it's all about having a robust local area network, a fat pipe to the internet, and you make sure that you got all of the networking set up so that they can quickly access the internet and all the services. You got to have reliable services that you're recommending, places for them to store files out there, hosted exchange server. Make sure that their email, what are they? That's the biggest thing. Where are you migrating their email? And if they need shared calendars, active sync for their Androids and their iPhones, and if they need shared contacts, right now, a hosted exchange solution is your best bet. Especially if they're already exchange, it will be a natural migration. If they're not using some of those, if they don't need the active sync, at least in the way that you interact with an exchange server, if they don't need the shared contacts, at least in the way that exchange server does it, you can do these things with Google Apps, which we're going to talk about in the next email. You can do some sharing, but it doesn't give you everything that the exchange server does. And if you want that same exact experience that they have with a local exchange server, and they need all of those features, then you got to deliver a hosted exchange server solution. And that's exactly what I'm going through with one client. And once that's finished and we see how that goes and we see how the service and reliability is, then I'm going to have a game plan for a couple other clients. Now, why would you want to stay? Why do you need a server locally? There are some client server applications that require it. I have a law firm that has that application Needles. To go to a hosted based Needles solution, it is just way too expensive. It's cost prohibitive. It's cheaper for them to actually maintain a server. Take a look at all of the applications and what the alternatives are. And if you're not using your server for anything else but just file storage and email, then you're a great candidate to decommission the server. But if you got some SQL Server apps running, you might not be able to get rid of the server. I hope that helps and that discussion jars some things for you to think about with your clients or your business that you're in. Here's a great companion question to this, and this is from Jason. And he says, I want to move my business website from one service provider to another. I accept that the site is going to be unavailable for a period of time while the new DNS propagates, and that is not a problem. What would be a problem, however, is not to be able to get to my email, especially if I lose mail. So I've been trying to figure out a way to not do that. What if I set up Google Apps to handle my email now before I make the change to the new ISP? Would that mean that when I make the change, I would still get email? That seems like it's either too obvious a solution or just plain magic. As in, why doesn't everybody do that? Or do they? Any advice you have for me on how to not be without email would be appreciated. I helped a client that was going through the exact same thing, and they were fortunate to be already on Google Apps. But even if you're not, that is the answer. You first make sure, before you make the change, you set up your MX records, and let's hope that the provider you're at now, you have full control of your MX records, and the provider that you're going to, you have full control of your MX records. What I would like to do, and this is important when it comes to your name servers, you first set up your MX records and you make sure you're getting your mail. Now, before you migrate over to the new provider, what you do is you go to your MX records and you make sure that they are set up exactly the same. So when the name server changes and the actual website is now being pointed to a new provider, when that name server is activated on the new hosting provider, you've already set up the same MX records. So now I'm an email message and I'm going to provider A and I'm looking to see where your MX records are and I see their Google Apps. And if that's turned off and I'm still searching and I now go to B and B is exactly the same, you're home free. So you are absolutely correct. Having a third party host your email that's away from the domains. And by the way, you've hit a question that is exactly what I'm going to be talking about this Saturday at the Philadelphia Area Computer Society, which is getting a domain name, then getting your web hosting, and getting email for free using Google Apps. That is exactly what I'm talking about. That's why I was very excited when this question came in today, Jason. Thank you so much, because I am talking about this Saturday, and this is exactly what I've done for clients to make sure that email will continue to flow and you're not going to miss. Now, what if you didn't do that? How would you get your email? It's not hard. You're not going to lose email because even if you, let's say you were setting up Google Apps after you migrated, well, you still got your old place to go to get your email. You're still not going to lose email. But, you know, you can check two different places at the same time. And I've had to do this just when you invoke Google Apps, that takes a few hours to replicate. So even the first time when you go check, let's say your email is hosted at provider ABC. Well, you could go pop to ABC and still get your mail. Now, when you change your Google Apps, still go there to get any stragglers for your email. You want to set your time to live to be 60 to be the lowest amount that you can, that TTL, because that will help you with the propagation. It usually just takes a few hours. I, for businesses, often pick Friday afternoons to make that change for email. So this way you have the whole weekend to make sure everything propagates properly. But I've successfully have done the migration to Google Apps, losing no email, and I've moved it from one provider to another without losing email. And that was great. It was actually a moving company that I helped, and they were moving their website from one to another, and they had two, and I had the separate logins. It was great for the where their hosting was, and all I had to do was just make sure the MX records were correct. It's all about the MX records. Make them correct, Jason, and you're good to go. Let me know how you make out with that. Let's take a second to hear from our other sponsor, GoToMeeting. We develop trust in the people we know, but we don't really know someone we can't see. That can be a tough hurdle in business, and with employees and clients around the world, that's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces, a simple online meeting service with group HD video. It helps you get better connected to the people you depend on for success. When you see someone, you make that visual connection. And to do that now online, boy, that's great. And to host your meeting, it's just one click and everybody connects. It supports voice over IP. There's an incredible tool set for you to be able to launch your presentation, and you can easily hand off for if you want to change presenters. Everybody sees your desktop on their screen. It's a great way to sell whatever you're selling, whether it's a support contract, whether it's a software demo, whatever it is. GoToMeeting is the best place for holding your meetings, and you can start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting, and you can try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. So be sure to use the promo code PODCAST. This is from Winston Wolf, and it's 10 pen testing Linux distributions. Ooh, what's pen testing? Penetration testing. With the help of open source tools, penetration testing can now be conducted easier, although it is also can be hard sometimes and cheaper. Linux has gained popularity in the area of pen testing and information security, not just because of its security, but because of its efficiency, and because most pen testing Linux distros that can just be booted using your flash drive or a CD, which makes wherein you don't need to install it on your hard drive. I have been through penetration tests where outside services, they charge thousands and thousands of dollars. They come in, and I've watched them literally boot up multiple machines doing their penetration testing internal. External is another way to be doing these tests against IP addresses. Be careful. You don't want to do a pen test unless they know you're doing it, because you know you will be hunted down, and you know these tools, as good as they are to help you, they can also be dangerous. So what are the 10? One, Backtrack 5. 2, it's Backbox Linux. 3 is Node 0. And then, here you go, I like this one, Black Ubuntu. I didn't even know that existed. Samurai Web Testing Framework. Well, that sounds good. Nopix STD. Weaker the 4N Linux. Boy, some of these names. Matrix Krypton. That sounds great. And then Project Playground. You got to see this. This site is just unbelievable. So if you're interested or you know someone that is interested in these kind of distributions, you can check out the link. It'll be in the show notes. This is from Daniel, and it's about time logging. As I listened to show 392, I thought of what I might do to record my time if I were in your situation. This is where my time logger program crashed, the app on my iPhone. You most likely have all of your contacts in your address book on your iPhone. So if you were to email yourself the V card for the client as you start and stop work, including the time, then mail would have a record of your time and a backup of your active clients for the day the iPhone breaks. Not that that will ever happen. And this is from Dan. That's a great idea. So that is very, very cool. And what a great backup plan for tracking your time, because it's right there. And I like that. I like nice, easy, obvious backup solutions that we didn't think of. So thank you very much for that. Now, this is the email I promised about the profiles. This is from Farron, and it's to copy user profiles, and then he also has a Google Apps Sync for Outlook. Two things. A few shows back, you were looking for a way to copy user profiles. I also searched for just such a utility, only to find out it's built into Windows. I've used it in XP, and it's still there in Windows 7. But I've not used it. Go to the System Properties, go to Advanced tab, and click the Settings button for User Profiles. You have to have already created a new profile that you're copying to, and you have to reboot to log in as administrator. I tried cutting corners and not doing the reboot, and it fails. Highlight the old profile in the list and click the Copy To button, and you're on your way. I've used it several times when moving a small office from a work group to a domain and wanted to keep the user's old profiles. As I recall, it does not keep the wallpaper or the arrangement of desktop icons, but it does move everything over nicely and easily. Has this gotten better? Because I remember years ago trying this and having it be unsuccessful. So, Farron, I'm going to give this another try and see, because I thought that this is not, I don't know, that the copy doesn't really work. Jerry in the chat is saying reprofiler is more efficient. I agree with that. I mean, this is something definitely to try, and he has a Microsoft link that I will share with you on how to do this, but we have a back out having reprofiler too, so that's excellent. Secondly, you mentioned a while back that you use Google Apps. Have you ever used the Google Apps Sync for Microsoft Outlook? No, I haven't. If so, can you tell me how well it works? Does it sync sent and received email across multiple computers, each running Outlook? Does it sync contacts? Does it sync the calendar, etc.? What version of Outlook were you using? If you've used it, please tell me what you can about it. I used this app that I paid $29 for called G-Sync, that it got frustrating. They kept updating it like every other day. And it was working for a little bit. And then the problem was I moved to Outlook 2010 and they didn't. And it was not only Outlook 2010, but it's the 64-bit version. And what happened, they didn't come up with a 64-bit version fast enough. And I ended up dropping it and not doing it. So I have not used the one that Google provides, the Google Apps Sync for Microsoft Outlook. So looking for feedback on anybody that's used that so we can help Farron here, let me know. I really appreciate all your feedback on that. Thank you. This is from Gordon, a tool for text, and he recommends D7. We've had techs in the past recommend D7, and it does a lot of things. Automatic downloads, extraction, offline and live malware removal, CPU and RAM stress testing, IP DNS configuration, backup and restore, sort of a catch-all utility. And a lot of people run D7. I don't. I still run, you know, tweaking.com's utility and internet repair tool. So there's still a lot of good ones, but I hear a lot of good things about D7, and a lot of times this comes up in the chat. So, Gordon, thank you, and I will have a link to that. This is the final email, and this is from Steve, and he says, Mike, love the show. Tech Vets also. Can't wait every week for them to come out. I learn something new every week. I will go back and re-listen to old ones at least one more time, and I am always amazed at the one thing or two that I missed or forgot to write. Thank God your team does such a good job with the show notes. Team, you're welcome. All right. Here is a question for the show, and the subject is Exchange 2003 question on installing RPC over HTTPS component. We're going to get real techie here real fast, but don't worry. Does installing the RPC over HTTPS component on a live production Exchange 2003 server cause any issues with user accounts, configuration, etc., or is it completely painless? Install, go, enable. Yes, it is painless. Go install, enable. But what I want you to do is make those configuration changes off hours, just in case. I never touch a production Exchange server during the day with making any kind of change like this. So yes, it's painless. Do it, but make sure you're doing it off hours, just right at the end of the day. I am just wanting to be careful and not to cause a restore nightmare due to not taking the time to at least research a bit on it. There are items to be aware of, precautions to take, etc. when enabling this component. Have our CA installed, 443 punched through our firewall, and Exchange ActiveSync working perfectly on our smartphones. An Outlook web access works just fine as well, but such an outdated web application by today's standards, so I doubt that we use that very often. Enabling RPC over HTTPS would be a nice for Outlook on our laptops to be connected without the VPN. Thanks again. Do it. You will love it. And I have this working with a couple clients with an Exchange server 2003, small business server, and I use this in the corporate world. What we're talking about here is configuring Outlook so when you're outside the office, you can use the Exchange service, not POP, not IMAP, not OWA, the true Exchange service in your Outlook and let it navigate across the internet securely and connect to your Exchange server and bring your email in from across the internet with no VPN. It is a very good idea. And that's why it's RPC over HTTPS. And that's the protocol naming convention for this communication between Outlook when it's outside the network and connecting across the internet to an internally protected Exchange server on an internal network. Steve, great question. Again, easy to do, activate it, but heed to my caution and do it off hours because you never mess around with a live production server on any changes. That is it for tonight's show. Now, the schedule is in March is going to be a little different. I'm not sure if it's March 1st or March 8th. One of those shows, I'm going to be doing the show on a Wednesday night. There's also the week of the show, the Thursday night, March 29th, I'm going to be in Florida. So I am very much going to try to see if I can do the show from Florida. So let's cross our fingers and see if that works out. But if it doesn't, there'll be no show that week in March. So with that, I want to thank everybody for your continued support of my Amazon link. That's amazon.mikenation.net. It's miketechshow.com/Amazon. Just thank you so very, very much for your continued use of those links and the support of the show. I greatly appreciate it. I'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.